Mrs. Narula, the floor is yours. Please go ahead.
Chair, and thank you, delegates and members of civil society, for your comments. I'll respond first to the recommendation of the EU delegation to delete individually and collectively, and here would strongly recommend that those words are retained in the article. The I know we will discuss the issue of individual and collective rights more tomorrow, but just to say that international human rights law has long recognized collective rights, not just for indigenous peoples, but for other communities as well. And as has been said by the delegation of Bolivia, the actual factual way in which individuals produce and enjoy their food is in communal terms. I would, however, recommend moving the words individually and collectively to much earlier in the paragraph, number two, to have it come immediately after the words people working in rural areas, such that the right, such that the individual and collective nature of the enjoyment of the right applies to the paragraph as a whole, as opposed to it appearing at the end of that paragraph. Secondly, on South Africa's proposal to include language that states seek to strengthen people's access to and utilization of resources, that language be included. To that point, I would add that that is very much in keeping with the interpretation of states' obligations to fulfill the right to adequate food under international human rights law, as has been articulated in the general comment number 12. On the issue of food security versus food sovereignty, here too, I would strongly recommend retaining food sovereignty in the text. For reasons that have already been articulated, but and a few more reasons. To begin, keeping food sovereignty as it has been articulated and understood in various regional other instruments, which I know Christoph will speak more to, in no way threatens or undermines the sovereignty of the state. Secondly, and as has already been said, it would be factually inaccurate to put in food security in paragraph four, as what has been recognized by many states and regions is not the right to food security, but the right to food sovereignty. Thirdly, on the issue of food security, it's important to understand that food security is an outcome. It is not a process. We are looking to achieve food security, but the question is, what is the process by which that is achieved? More to the point, this is a human rights document, so really the more relevant provision is actually the right to adequate food and the concept of the right to adequate food. Food sovereignty can be seen as a process by which the right to adequate food can be achieved, not just for peasants and rural communities, but for humanity as a whole. This point has been made very clearly by multiple special rapporteurs on the right to food, who have indicated that food sovereignty is in many regions and many situations a precondition for the fulfillment of the right to adequate food. And also, CEDA has also more recently made this point in general comment number, in general recommendation number 34. I also wanted to add on this point that it's incredibly important to understand states' obligations vis-a-vis the right to adequate food when discussing food sovereignty. States have an obligation to respect, protect, and fulfill the right to food. Respecting the right to food includes refraining from taking measures that deprive individuals of access to productive resources on which they depend when they produce food for themselves. Protecting the right to food means states should protect access to productive resources from encroachment by foreign and domestic private parties. And the obligation to fulfill the right to food means that states must seek to strengthen people's access to and utilization of resources and means to ensure their livelihoods. Ensuring the food sovereignty of peasants and rural communities is a means for states to ensure their obligations to respect, protect, and fulfill, because it centers the agency and decision-making of rural communities and peasants of how it is that they access resources and the decisions that they then make to produce their own food. Finally, I would just conclude by saying, and a reminder from some of the facts that were contributed yesterday, the peasant food economy produces and feeds 70% of the world's population using less than 25% of its arable land as well as other natural resources, and it does so in ways that are far more sustainable, resilient to climate shocks, and that preserves and supports biodiversity. By contrast, the industrial food system produces only 30% of the world's food, using 70% of its land, using mechanisms and methods that are quite devastating for biodiversity and for the environment. So the broader state's obligation to fulfill the right to adequate food is also vested in ensuring that the kinds of food systems that we are using are those that ensure sustainable access to this food for this generation and generations to come. So I would also point out that food sovereignty is important for sustainability concerns and also for the right to food of broader communities and humanity and not just peasants and other communities. I would therefore strongly recommend leaving it in the article, especially since the article already expresses a compromise from earlier language that was previously considered. Thank you.